Hello and welcome to The Game Is About Glory. I'm your host, Steph, and joining me are Ricky and Milo. Hello, gents.
Hi, Steph.
Good evening, Steph.
Indeed, indeed. And chaps, look, I have looked at the notes and I know that there's usually something for everyone to see that I've crafted with regards to introducing the pod and where we'll be going. And I try and make some funny quip or an analogy and it all should sound so wonderful. But the truth is, actually, yesterday was a tough one, even for me and my lemon bowl. I'm being completely honest. So as we make our way through the bones of that 3-0 hammering at Fulham, I'm actually going to be looking to our chat for a little restorative balance, albeit some has come back to me 24 hours later. But, you know, I think a conversation here is going to help even out some of the pretty rough bumps I was feeling yesterday at the final whistle. So I am looking forward to this conversation. As weird as that sounds, but all right. Craven Cottage, it should have been a Saturday night special, and it was, but not in the way we expected. So in a nutshell, what did you think of our performance? Which one of you wants to lead off?
Come on, Ricky, you go first.
In a nutshell, I think I was hoping that, I mean, if you played 2 hours before the game, if you played the tape of last week's game, you would then think, oh, this isn't going to happen today. And unfortunately, I think the team in white played pretty much how I wanted us to play. And there wasn't many redeeming features. Everyone sort of had a bit of an off day. I don't really give anyone much credit. We had some chances, but a lot of them were at probably 3-0 when we were 3-0 down. And it just kind of was slightly baffling. I think, you know, I expect bumps on the road, but it seems like we climbed a mountain last week and we went all the way down to the valley this week. So that's more than a bump, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. I mean, no one deserves more than a 4 or 5 out of 10, do they, for their performance right across the team. I've rewatched the game today because I'm a sucker for punishment.
You're a brave man. Brave man.
And I think this is often the case. I mean, you know, obviously Fulham were the far, far better team throughout, but, you know, we had plenty of chances and it could have ended up being a very, very different game if we'd taken those. But it wouldn't have changed the fact that it was a poor performance from everyone. And I've got some thoughts about, you know, why that was, both in terms of, you know, why Fulham was so good and why it was so effective against us and why we struggled to get out of, well, even first gear, really, wasn't it? Which, you know, well, I'll go through over the next 40 minutes or so, I suppose, before we move on to the week that was. So, yeah, I won't blow it here. Yeah, I agree with you, Ricky. It was a really shoddy, shitty performance. Fulham, I thought, were excellent. And I hope it's a learning experience for everyone. And I think it's also, you know, it's another one where it's really exposed, you know, how much further there is to go in kind of building this team. I think it was last week was a real high point. It was probably our best performance under Ange. This was probably our worst performance under Ange.
Like a nutshell itself, I thought it was a taupe kit performance. I mean, that was the only thing missing yesterday was we weren't wearing our wonderful third kit, which even I haven't bought. I mean, it had all the hallmarks of some of the performances that we've expected from that shirt. I just thought, look, time and time again, I just thought we showed up thinking we could roll over this team. That's what it, and we could rely on some of the things that have got us out of Dodge in the last few games. Tight margins. If you don't take advantage of chances when you've got them, it can always go wrong. And I think, as we'll analyse, probably the most shocking thing was not so much the first half, but the second half. So I think somewhere in our nutshells, we're all just agreeing that this was really a pretty poor performance. So I think we'll just break it down, right? We'll start with the team selection. Milo?
Yeah, so Dragosan in for Van de Ven. That's the only change, I think, before kickoff. I was pretty happy with that. I thought, and obviously this team had done very well last weekend, ran our socks off, pressed relentlessly. Dragosan, you know, I kind of went over, you know, some of what, where I thought were, you know, some of the weaknesses in this game, which I think the same things were evident in this game. And, you know, part of the reason I think we struggled. But yeah, he's got to be given time. He's got to be given minutes. So yeah, when the team was announced, I thought, great, you know, it's probably pretty close to what I would have picked. And I can understand kind of sticking with the players who've done so well last week.
Yep, not much to add to that. I think Fulham, I expected Fulham definitely not to defend. I think especially when they're at the Cottage there, they're quite an all-action team and like to go for it. So we kind of stuck with our probably more all-action midfielders with Sarr and Bissouma. So
yeah, and so actually just picking up on that, and say before kickoff, I was feeling quite optimistic about that because Fulham, I thought, were going to kind of come and play us. And, well, it did. And typically, we tend to do quite well. Yeah, I thought there'd be space for us to exploit. I thought we'd have chances to get through them and get in behind. And, yeah, didn't really pan out that way.
That was my wrong call before the game. I just thought if they want to go like toe-to-toe with us, any team, beware. And, you know, that confidence has been, you know, since last Sunday, I think, against Villa. You know, that, why wouldn't you be that confident? So it's just a bit of a head-scratcher. What about you, Seth?
I think, look, I've nothing more to say on the team selection. I think you've said everything, both of you. I think that we should, you know, it is a game where we never got going. You know, we're going to break down what, you know, what went wrong, and was it just a bad day at the office, or is there a more worrying reason? So allow me to just start in on that for a moment and get us going. I think we have to, first of all, we do, as you both have already done, really have to give Marco Silva a lot of credit here. I mean, Fulham came at us. They seem to be pressing everyone but the centre backs, which, I mean, is surely something that he was, you know, very, very aware of. What he knows what he's doing. As you pointed out, Milo, you know, Radu's making a full debut. You know, it's an important position for us. Press those fullbacks and, press those centre backs. And all of a sudden, it gets a little harder to move the ball fluidly. It gets a little harder to get progression up the pitch, so on and so forth. I was really stunned by how we just didn't look sharp from the first 5 minutes. Touches were off, a little blunt. It just looked like a lack of focus as well. And Fulham were on their game.
So you said press their centre backs. They didn't press their centre backs particularly, did they? Because they dropped off and then blocked the passing lanes into midfield.
Okay. They didn't press the centre back. Sorry. I mean, they pressed everyone but the centre backs. Thank you. Sorry. I got my words confused.
Yeah. I knew what you meant. That's why I was picking it up. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got my words confused. Essentially, because I don't usually get particularly tactical when I make a point. I agree. So I do want to thank you for helping me clarify. Just to clarify what I saw, and totally up for conversation, was they were very happy to let our centre backs have the ball. Yep. That's basically what I was saying. And then everyone else has like got someone right up their backside.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think what was particularly interesting here was they were doubling up in the wide areas. And, you know, typically what we try to do is to pack the middle and force teams around the outside. And I think because, you know, I mean, all of their Fulham's goals came from wide spaces, exploiting wide spaces and then coming in. We were really struggling to move the ball into the wide areas. And I think as a result of that, we weren't really seeing the fullbacks inverting as much as they normally would, which means that we were struggling to play into midfield and find the ball there. And then on top of that, you've got a centre back, you know, in Dragosan, who isn't particularly comfortable passing, is very one-footed, and suddenly that build-up play isn't there. So, I mean, I've got kind of our average touches. So, do you know the passing maps you sometimes see after a game where you get the players in their average positions and then the lines between them? Well, for this one, there's no line between Dragosan and Udogie. None at all. And a very, very faint one from Dragosan into Maddison because he's not comfortable passing that way. All of his passes are going to Romero, which means that from the pressing game that Fulham are playing, it's easy because they know that the ball's only going to go one way. So in terms of Udogie in this game had 48 touches of the ball over the full game. Against Aston Villa, he had 80. Bissouma touched the ball 46 times. Against Aston Villa, he touched it 106 times. Maddison, 40 touches in this game, 78 against Villa. And then Dragosan himself, he played the full game. He got touched the ball 64 times. Van de Ven, who only played half a game against Villa, touched it 66 times in that half a game. So I think in your nutshell, this is a delayed nutshell for you, Steph. I think that's part of the reason there. And no, because Dragosan is so one-sided and, you know, is not playing out through that side. If you think about Van de Ven then, who I don't think is the best passer by any means. I think he's quite limited in that. You know, his strength is elsewhere, but he does have those pass out to Johnson. He links up well with Udogie. That's absent. And then we're lopsided, which again, when they're pressing us wide, makes it easy for them. And the other point I think to pick up on, which I think is really really interesting is that passes per defensive action. So this is, you know, how many times we let the opponent touch the ball before we press them. And, you know, our success over the last few weeks has all been down to our pressing. So in the Fulham game, Fulham had 10.15 touches before we engaged them. Against Aston Villa, it was 4.26. So over twice as many touches we're letting the opposition have. So we're not building out from the back. We're not pressing from the front. And there's other issues through the side. But actually, the two things that we're really good at, relentless pressing from the front and really, really good little triangles out from the back. And we haven't got, we've got neither of them there.
I think that was large. I mean, they were, they were just faster and sharper out the gate, really, weren't they, to us, I guess. Yes. You know, we didn't really start that fast. And I just think the midfield got so, they were either like, they're either fighting fires all the time or just being hassled to death by Fulham. And I think that's probably... And then Fulham gained some great possession from that and actually found it, especially in that first half hour, found it quite easy to play around us and get into dangerous areas in the penalty box. And it resulted in a little bit of like lunging defending, a bit of last blocking defending, hoping it wasn't going to fall to their bloke, you know, near the penalty spot and all that. It was high mouse stuff quite a lot of the time. And we just... But you think you're going to kind of then break out of that into a pattern where we have a bit more control. And I think after a half hour, we did create some chances, but it still wasn't pretty.
We certainly did end up finding a little bit of the bit between our teeth midway through the first half. But by and large, again, I think, you know, I mean, again, credit to Marco Silva. He knows, and I know that, slightly differing views on how deep James Maddison drops in a game. And sometimes it's not a problem. But in a game like this, it is a problem because he wants the ball. He's trying to find the ball. He's doing anything he can to get on it. But Marco Silva and Fulham are delighted with him back there because, you know, one of the rare moments that he actually did get into those areas where we like to see him operate, he arguably should have scored. He had a chance, we just, for me, every touch was off. It was one of those weird things. You're just looking, you're like, if someone had told me that they'd had food poisoning, I wouldn't have been shocked because the focus just seemed to shade off on every simple execution that was happening.
Yeah. I mean, I disagree with your Maddison there again. I think I want to see him. He's effectively in a free role. I want to see him moving like that. We should be seeing our midfield rotate. I think that's the idea of the system. So I don't have an issue with that. I think I probably would like to see Saar and Maddison support the wide players better and try and play through that so we don't have the issue, you know, don't have the same issues there of getting overloaded. And I think, again, I think they probably should have got closer to Bissouma and helped him. Although he didn't have... didn't have that many touches. His pass success rate was second best in the team. I think Romero is the only player in the starting 11 who's got a better pass success rate than him. Højbjerg has a better one for the last half an hour. Overall, I think he just didn't have enough of the ball. There wasn't the passes on the triangles to build out from the back, and kind of stunted there. But I think Maddison, coming in and helping would have been fine.
Do you think some of the kind of triangles and that first ball out of the back is quite often helped by those kind of inverted fullbacks because it Absolutely. Brings extra people into the space? But do you think Fulham were just kind of closing off that space because it seemed to nullify that? And I've actually thought that in some other games where they've been nullified a bit, when really earlier in the season it was a massive feature. It's so noticeable, all the various positions Porro and Udogie would take up. And I mean, teams watch us week in, week out. They watch us, so you don't expect them not to react to it. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I mean, what you find in those triangles is the third man makes a run, and then the ball comes in behind. So if that run's not happening, then obviously you're not going to get that same. You're not going to get the build up there. But also, I think they were having to focus on the wide areas because we were getting overloaded there, and that's where the main threat from Fulham was coming from as well. So that also pulls them out. And I think it's interesting here in terms of. Kind of, tactics we've had against us this season. I think this is the first time we've seen this one. You know, typically, we've got, City, Arsenal, a few others press us very, very high up. And, we've managed to find our way through that eventually. But, we have struggled with that on times. Obviously, we've had the low block and we've had people kicking us off the pitch. This is the first time I think I've seen a team overloading the wide areas. And I'm not sure that many teams would be as comfortable playing as Fulham did against us, because if you're not fully on it, then I think we would take advantage. But it is interesting that there's another tactic that we've seen be successful against us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you know, all these things don't happen in isolation. I mean, I love to see a free roaming midfielder like conjuring from all over the pitch. I love to do that, and I like to see that happen. But I just think when things aren't happening around them in the normal fashion, when the shape isn't moving as it does, I just think it becomes an issue. It really does. So I didn't think it was particularly helpful for us yesterday. I thought the movement in general from the front three wasn't that good, to be honest. It wasn't particularly dynamic. It didn't seem particularly sharp. You're going to say something about that.
To sort of round off that last bit, I think that the interesting thing is going back to like the earlier season bit, is it really, we had the games where it felt like we had an extra two players on the pitch.
Yeah.
When this week, it felt almost like the reverse. You thought Fulham had extra players because sometimes when they were breaking, it was just like...
The people are working. We had a honeymoon period, right? This is reality, right? I mean,
it's an expectation that would happen. Yeah, you've got to have, you know, you can't expect everyone to sort of wave you through every week. Yeah, they're going to
The first 10 games has come up an awful lot, and I just think it's a nice metric, but we have to be realistic and say that teams are very quickly suss out what they want to do against that system once they've seen it in play a few times, and that's what we're seeing.
So now I suppose, I mean, something that we'll lead on to probably is what is our reaction to that? Because we keep trying to do the same plan better, like as we say, it seems to be the case, or we get better players to do the same plan better, or we adjust slightly, which, you know, it's all fun. That's the game, isn't it, really, at the end of the day?
I mean, I'm not sure I agree that it's kind of other teams adjusting to us. I think, as I said, I think this is the first time we've seen this tactic against us. I think if Van de Ven's in the team, I think it's very different because we're not so lopsided and it'll be easier to play out. But, you know, I think also we can't have another day where we're not pressing like this. This is the system. And I think the thing we have to bear in mind with pressing is it's a whole team effort. You know, the front line, if they go up and press the defenders and the keeper, then the midfield have to step up. The defense have to step up. We just weren't doing it.
Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, look, to take your point, and bring it further. I do think there is absolute validity to it. I mean, you know, Van de Ven would make a difference just for comfort levels alone. And, you know, there's also the truth that we had two, possibly three, if you want to count them, extremely good chances in the first half. Sonny's had a chance, which you'd really expect him to do better with. Brennan Johnson's had a chance. You would actually, based on last week, expect him to score. You would expect him to put it in the back of the net and he's whiffed it. And then Madison's had that chance, which, you know, again, you expect, I mean, look, it's very close. He's taken out the water bottle, but, you know, again, you expect him to maybe hit the target from there with that range. So, you know, for all the criticism, we did create three very good chances in the first half, which off the top of my head, I don't remember us creating three chances as good as that in the first half at Villa Park. So it does become a game of margins, right? It does. And I think we're all agreeing on that. And I think it does come down to this weird feeling that I had that we just were not at the races. And that's the bit that, you know, that's the bit where, you know, was it just a bad day at the office or is there a more worrying reason? I think that's why that question's in there. And I think it's an interesting one to ponder for a moment. And I'm interested in what both of you think.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of set out where I think those issues were. What's the reason behind it? I think we're unlikely to see all of those combinations happen again in the same game. I think it's, you know, probably pretty unusual like that. I would imagine that, you know, we're going to have to go back to the training ground and do some work on wide overloads and ways through that. I'd be surprised if this is the first time Ange's encountered it. I think a lot that not many opponents or a lot of opponents wouldn't be as comfortable doing what Fulham did. So, you know, I think, you know, we should take some comfort from that. I mean, basically, you've got to support the wide players and then, you know, shift back into shape very quickly once you've recovered the ball. And again, I think, you know, if we were pressing more from the front, then Fulham can't settle. And, I just don't think we were aggressive enough. And that's the key part of our game is, you know, pressing right up, closing down, not allowing teams to settle on the ball. You know, Fulham's one-touch passing was excellent. But, we've got to be more on it.
Yeah, and we missed a couple of chances, by the way, with one touch passes to play someone right through. Sonny in particular whiffed on one that I think would have been playing in Deki, which in the first half, and you're just like, you're looking, you're like, huh, maybe it's going to be one of those days. I do think there's a, you know, this was one of those where I just, it felt like a conflation of every fatigue, all of it. It just seemed to hit at the same time for me.
I mean, I think there's, you know, there's a certain element of holding your hands up and saying Fulham executed what they wanted to do excellently. I think there is a slight worry. I know Ange just tries to smooth over and just puts everything in the kind of, you know, we're kind of making progress gradually and it's, you know, what happens in the long view is more important. But I felt it just felt a bit off after like what we achieved at Villa Park last week. That was slightly
you don't think that he's actually addressing the team like that, do you? I mean, I was very interested to see how he would speak after the game, and he said pretty much exactly what I thought he would do.
Yeah.
And he's not calling anybody out. He's not going to. No. He's going to give you a holistic. I would suspect he was exceptionally unhappy with the approach. I mean, I don't know if I'm speaking for all of us here, but I'll give my opinion. I felt that this was a little bit mentally immature. I thought it was a slightly mentally immature performance. We came there expecting to be able to kind of do what we do, have that tight first half, blow people away in the second half, and Fulham did not back off. They scored the goal. I was even seeing, one of my friends was saying, now Fulham will probably sit back and we'll be able to come at them. They had no intention of it. They continued to blow us away. And I think that we got caught out. And I think it's a psychological approach. I think we went there thinking, we should win this game.
I said that in our chat that I just still confident. I mean, obviously they scored at a very good time for them. I mean, a lot of their goals were in great times for them. But I just thought the second half we'd come out. And I've seen us come out second halves and like really step it up. And I was wrong again with that. I think I was kind of quite surprised with that, to be honest. I did notice actually before the game, I think on my Life Score app, I don't think they've got any injuries at the moment either. So they've got like plenty of people to choose from. But the other thing I've noticed from Fulham is they're very, and this is what we didn't take advantage of, is their results are very flip-floppy, aren't they? And it makes me think that and quite often the team's a confidence team when it's like that. And we never dented their confidence. And the thing that would dent their confidence is obviously scoring a goal and then see how they react. And I think that's probably what's happened some other weeks when they've played teams. And they just, because
the first goal was always going to be vital. Yeah.
We gave them nothing to knock their confidence whatsoever. They looked like full of it and had plenty of energy in their legs from the first to the 100th minute or however long we played.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the bench and, you know, what we had there and what, you know, the solutions we might have had there, I suspect that if Richie was fully fit, we would have seen him earlier. You know, again, if we're not pressing well, we're not leading from the front, then, you know, the one thing he is exceptional at is pressing and you know, roughing teams up, finding space there. And I suspect the reason we only saw him come on was about the 80th minute, just shy of the 80th minute, wasn't it? Was because, you know, this week's the first week he's trained since the injury and probably trying to protect him a bit.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about, what about some of the goals then? Because I think the first one was, I think, as you said in our chat, Steph, is it Robinson, their left back?
Yep.
The Dragusin, I think he was, when you looked at it, I mean, you looked out to the left, he had Romero there and the other person with Robinson. And I've said it other weeks, all you've got to do, the only person putting that ball in the net is their striker. So you can look at the ball, you can look at the ball out left, you can look at the ball, you look at the ball come past you and think, oh shit, I'm not marking the centre forward. And that's another thing he's got to learn. In this league, you'll get crosses like that. So you've just got to be 100% switched on all the time. And there's no reason he can't stand next to the striker. The striker's standing in between him and, I presume, you, Doggy, on the left there. And it's just, you know, a good ball's a good ball, but you will get that in this league. And that's like another level that you have to understand. I mean, I'm not blaming him for that because, you know, everyone gets done by a good pass. But I thought there was no reason he couldn't be standing with his striker compared to where he was standing. And that gave the man enough space, took a good touch and a good finish. So fair play to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think we might end up doing Dragusin here rather than later on. I mean, you know, he had an involvement in the wrong way for all of their three goals, didn't he? He was, you know, not close enough to Moniz for the first one. The second one comes off his thigh and goes across, doesn't it? And then the third one, I mean, he probably should be credited with an assist for the third one. And I think, you know, I felt last week that he was being conservative because playing it safe because he was trying to adjust to the pace of the league. I think that was definitely the case in this game that, you know, he looked off the pace, you know, off the pace of a Premier League game, particularly when Fulham had the ball. And I think, I think he'll come good. I think he's fine. He's a good player. He's got, you know, we're still in that kind of getting to know your his strengths and weaknesses. And I think, you know, his ball carrying looks a lot better than his passing. And I don't think, you know, even with, you know, even when he's settled in the league, he's never going to be the best passer. His ball carrying, there's a couple of times he got upfield, I thought he looked very good. You know, as a one-on-one defender, he looks solid. But when people were getting in behind him or play was behind him, he looked like he was struggling. And I think that, you know, that's the difference between here and Serie A.
I mean, there's two things on that as well. Number one, very unfortunate for him to get his start on the 1 week where absolutely nobody showed up other than Big Vic. I think Big Vic's probably for me the only player that gets away with any sort of credit for anything yesterday. So that's not going to help you, is it? When your teammates are not playing at level. And actually, to that point, I think, you know, the left-hand side could have been giving him a little more help, knowing that this was the case. The other thing is, I think there is a reality here. As a team, as a club, we have relied on cheat mode an awful lot. Now, cheat mode probably gets there and that first goal doesn't happen. And he probably turns an excellent cross into a defensive action that prevents a goal that we didn't see. And I think sometimes I do wonder if a couple of our players maybe yesterday forgot that they weren't playing with cheat mode. I think he needed a little more support than he got from those around him. I really do.
But I don't think that's Ange ball, Steph. I think, you know, the whole thing about that this system is meant to be being brave, is meant to be the players pushing forward. And I don't think that Ange would want that. I think Ange would want the players to play the system, play the way, you know, to be brave. And, you know, I think we're in a, you know, in a acclimatization period with him. I think it's interesting that Ange said after the game that we will be signing a left centre back in the summer. So, you know, I think that's
good.
Which
is another thing to point out. I mean, he's not naturally, that's not his favourite position. I mean, that is something else we should point out.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, Steph. I mean, he has played there, but not in a back four. He's played there in a back three. I mean, mainly he played in the middle of a back three at Genoa. Right. So, but I think it's more, I mean, obviously there's an issue because he's so one-footed and, you know, his first touch isn't great. I think he's a bit stiff when he's receiving the ball. But yeah, I think the main issue there is him getting used to the league.
Yeah, and also that juxtapose of coming in when nobody is having a good game. It's tough. It's really tough. It's got to be double tough at that point.
I mean, the other problem we had is, or he had, was that we were playing, I mean, Fulham played so well that they actually won the ball back in some areas, which then put him under pressure straight away. In other words, he was in quite an exposed situation, because even either Udogie might have lost it, or we misplaced the pass, or Udogie might be further up the field. And then they weren't hanging about with then attacking us in the transition with that. So I think sometimes he was just backpedaling a bit, or it, defending can get a bit chaos sometimes. And it's not that great when you're kind of making your debut or your full debut in that kind of situation. But having said that, I mean, I think the second goal was probably the worst goal we've conceded this year. It was absolutely terrible. I thought that ball into centre midfield with the man had 40 yards of space, and then Udogie done a really woeful attempt to stop. And then before you know it, they're in the box, and then, you know, they got lucky. I think it went off the post.
Yeah, and that's somewhat, I mean, that's somewhat, without calling anyone out, I think Udogie could have done slightly better with his defensive duties yesterday. And I appreciate that we looked to him to go forward, but he wasn't actually getting forward that much either. So I'm looking for something from someone who's having an off day. That's kind of what it's, so, you know, and it was a terrible goal to concede on many levels, not the least of which is you should not be that switched off. I mean, you really, it's, you know.
I mean, what you've got to bear in mind with Udogie, though, Steph, is that he's getting doubled up on. So, you know, he can't go away from that. So, you know, he is getting occupied. So it makes it difficult for him to do what you're asking him to do. And I think with that second goal from the throw, Maddison should be back there, I think. So Bissouma is coming across marking Pereira, who's near where the throw is being taken. And again, you know, this is part of the issue with, you know, Fulham having those men wide, because we're going out wide to mark the men, which is what leaves that gaping hole in the middle. And I think when the pass comes through, you're seeing Maddison run back into frame as the ball's going across. Yeah. And I think he probably should have been deeper and in that space there, because the other central midfielders, both Sarr and Bissouma, are over on near the touchline marking players there.
So I think Paulinho basically received it and offloaded it like double quick time from that throw and straight to that man in the centre who was just had acres of space. It was, I don't know, but we still, I mean, you know, there's still ways to stop a goal even from that point, and we just were a bit weak and
we
a bit
switched on.
No.
Just not switched on. I mean, that was the biggest problem for me. We're not switched on at those moments. That, I mean, which
start,
you know,
start of the second half as well, and it's just like, is that how we're going to start? It's just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think we sort of in a roundabout way keep on coming back to this tactic that you know Marco Silva you know produced, and where you know there's pressure on every player around the pitch other than our centre backs, and we paid for it repeatedly. You've got to be sharper. Mm. We have to be sharper. And we just weren't. I sometimes I think a game can be beyond too much tactical breakdown, because we've asserted that the margins are fine. We've asserted that if we scored any one of the three, you know, what you might consider fairly easy chances that we created in the first half, the game is completely different. You know, there are these fine margins. And so what is that fine margin? For me personally watching, it was the fact we just didn't quite look at it, and Fulham took full advantage. I mean, I don't know if we want to break down. I don't think we probably do, really, get into the last 20 minutes. I mean, obviously, we looked a lot better. I mean, Fulham were 3-0 up. There's just no point, really. Of course, you know, Højbjerg is going to have a better time of it. I mean, Fulham are going to relax a tiny bit. I think it's going to be a more open game. So, it's tough to say what we did or didn't learn from this game, other than there are no easy games, and you need to know it, and you need to show up and be your full selves for 100 minutes of every game in the Premier League, right? I mean, that's the lesson I see from this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, sorry, that you don't talk about the 20 minutes and then plowed on.
Because I was saying I didn't know if we were going to get into it, and then so I didn't know if we wanted to, but please go there if you want.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, we had a really good, I don't know, 5 minutes or so, you know, shortly after those subs were made, and you've got, you know, both Johnson and Werner having, well, Werner had two good chances, didn't he? Very, very, in a very short period of time. Well, and again, I think one of those goes in, and, you know, with half an hour to go, I think there's pressure on Fulham. And obviously we've done well at scoring goals in quick succession, haven't we? Recently, or, you know, this season, full stop. And, you know, if we'd managed to get a couple of quick goals at that point, then I think the momentum of the game could switch. And so, I think what you're right. You're right in what you say about Højbjerg and others. In that, you know, they're coming on fresh. Coming on fresh. You know, Fulham don't need to push forward as much. They're going to get a bit more time. But yeah, I do think, you know, you talked earlier on about the Maddison chance that went just wide. It was 0-0 at that point. There's quite a few chances where if we'd got a goal, then maybe the game, you know, the pendulum swings the other way and it's a different game.
Would you maybe have, because it was quite interesting that he changed the whole centre midfield at once.
You're going to say exactly what I was going to ask about the subs. You're going to bring that up, aren't you? Like, could it have happened earlier?
Because the first half wasn't very impressive. I mean, the annoying thing was the timing of their goals, because it was only 3 minutes into the second half when they went 2-0 up. And it just made me wonder whether he could have changed it either at half-time or even straight after that second goal. I mean, because it clearly wasn't like working. And I mean, I know you can say things in the dressing room at half time and you've then only given them 3 minutes, but you could still say, well, look, I said these things and they've scored another goal and I'm not happy about it. Let's just do some big changes, because maybe a different kind of midfield might have just matched up better against Fulham. I don't know. I mean, you've got to try something, because obviously they looked like they were superior to us. But
yeah, I mean, there must have been the temptation to change that. I mean, I think, you know, Bentancur for Sarr must have been tempting, although, you know, I suppose with
control, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Sarr probably had his worst game for us yesterday. Certainly, his worst game under Ange. I think his past success rate was 67%. Yeah, 67.7%. And a lot of the game just passed him by, which is normally
really
you can rely on him to be at the pace of the game and to be a nuisance. He wasn't really that. So maybe Bentancur for him, but Højbjerg's running around, you know, might have been useful. But I think the obvious one is Richie and press from the front and close down and try and force Fulham onto the back foot a bit. But yeah, maybe his fitness isn't there for that. And I suppose Werner, you know, I thought Werner came on and had an immediate impact.
Yeah, I do wonder if, I mean, first of all, this side has certainly earned the right to come back in the second half and go out for the next 15, 20 minutes and correct the wrongs. And I'm sure that Andrew's probably thinking that. And that was probably the weight of balance in with regards to subs, you know, potential subs at half time was probably about that. He's like, look, you know, there's no reason to think that we can't turn this around. That we're going to go out and we're going to do what we did. I think that the interesting question is why at 2-0 he didn't make some of those changes, because that would have been a key moment to have done it. I do wonder if this is somewhat of a teaching moment for him to the rest of the squad. I don't know. That's the only thing I can really conjure. Either that, or he's maybe still learning when you need to make a sub in this league, which I find hard to believe. He's such an experienced manager.
I don't think making subs in this league is any different from making subs in any other leagues. I don't think there's a learning point there for him. I think
just to be clear, I didn't completely twat him off. I did kind of work it through him myself and come to that conclusion.
I do think that there's a case for leaving them out there to work it out for themselves or work through it. You know, I think it's probably also true that by the time he made the substitutions, the game was gone. So yeah, I mean, I was thinking during the game that maybe, you know, maybe you can make those changes earlier. But I mean, I also think that, you know, we know that, you know, the squad depth isn't there. Probably the players you'd want to do that maybe aren't there. And I think, you know, part of that is kind of showing where we are in that process. I think, you know, there's a lot more work to do with this squad. There's a lot more work to do with this team. There's several more steps up to go. And I think, you know, what yesterday showed was just, you know, to bring that home, you know, and said himself in the press conference before the Villa game when he was asked about the squad, and he was very open about how much more work there was to do there. And how much more strengthening there is. And I think even in that, he said that he didn't think that that would be completed this summer. He thought that was too much for three windows. So he's obviously thinking that in terms of the players he needs, that's going to take us up to January next year, or, you know, kind of summer 25 to sort out. So he seems to be suggesting that, you know, his peak team is going to be 25, 26.
Oh, I think he's absolutely right. And I think, again, I think it was a big teaching moment for many of the players who stayed on the pitch through 3-0 before they got subbed off. It was a lesson learned, and I'm sure it will be a lesson learned under Ange, because I don't think anything happens twice. Doesn't seem to happen twice under him. I know that Gareth would argue that this was like Brighton away, but I think the manner of the defeats was slightly different. This one was actually probably a little more insipid, in as much as we didn't even really stage that much of a comeback. There is a lot of work to be done. I'm not particularly worried about the rest of the season. I mean, I don't know how either of you feel. I still feel that we will lick our wounds, learn, and get on with it. I mean, I really do. Am I alone in that thought?
I'd agree with that. I think yesterday, well, I've already said this, I'm kind of repeating myself, you know, I think yesterday was a bit of a perfect storm in terms of all the, you know, all the things that came together at the same time. That's unlikely to happen again. I think, you know, generally we've been pretty good at finding solutions for issues. I don't think there's too many teams in the league who'd be able to do to us what Fulham did yesterday, thankfully. I think the worst thing about it is that it's just before an international break, and we'll get to kind of dwell on it for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. No, it's not kind of, it's not my confidence in what I think we can achieve this season. But that's because we're in a pretty narrow band of probably us and Villa will just, you know, one of us will be fourth, one of us will be fifth. I mean, I still can't see us falling any lower than below United, any of the Uniteds, whether that be West Ham or Man United or anyone. So, you know, we just keep plugging away. And if we don't get champion, I mean, I'm not even fussed about the Champions League thing really with fifth place. I mean, that's just a rule basically. So at the end of the season, they'll tell us whether fifth place has earned that. I'm not going to want a team to win or anything. And there's advantages to being in the Champions League, which are monetary, and there's advantages to being in the Europa League, which might be, if you're still trying to develop your team, your Europa League, you've got more chance to be flexible with the squad without feeling that every game's as important, kind of thing. So it is what it is, really.
I wanted to go back to something you'd asked earlier, Ricky, which was, you know, about adjustments versus, you know, style versus what we're doing versus how we're playing. And because it's an interesting question. It's one that's doubtless going to be cropping up already all over our fan forums and so on and so forth. For me, it's very straightforward. We are who we are, and we need to be who we're going to be. And if that takes another season and another transfer window or two, I am in for that ride. I'm not a fan of reactionary change and adaptation just because of one bad result. That's just my take.
You're living in the wrong era, Steph.
I know. Yeah. There's always going to be slight adjustments, and you know, coaches are sophisticated enough to make those slight adjustments, maybe without us necessarily fully recognizing them against the pantheon of what we're actually doing. But I'm still, despite yesterday's result, I'm still all in with what his philosophy is, what he wants us to be, who we've been, and who I hope we continue to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you'd offered us this at the beginning of the season, where we are now, we all would have bitten your arm off. And I think it's only probably the high points through the autumn that have kind of skewed people's expectations. And I think, you know, some people think that we ought to be doing that, you know, every week all the way through the season. And, you know, since the Chelsea game, it's been a little bumpy, hasn't it? You know, that's the truth of it. And you've probably got, you know, 2-3 games there where we've been very good, a load where we've been pretty average, and a few, you know, a few where we haven't been very good. But realistically, the bad games this season, I mean, the Wolves game and this one are probably the worst two, aren't they? Probably.
Brighton's in there. There's probably been 3 bad games, right? So,
but that's not bad in his first season. We know that the squad is incomplete. We know that, you know, there's a lot of young players there who are still learning, you know, well, how to be a Premier League footballer for a start, but also how to be a Premier League footballer for this manager. And I'm pretty confident that we'll get there. We'll get better. We will strengthen in the summer. We'll be a better team next year. The players that are with us, the younger players that are with us, will be that further along the line. The players that don't suit the system will be moved on, and better fits will come in. I was looking back at kind of Arteta's side from his second season, and there aren't, you know, he brought in players at that point to improve them from what he'd inherited. And a lot of those players he brought in, he subsequently moved on. You know, although they improved them, they weren't what he needed in the longer term. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think we've got to be honest about, you know, where we've got to get to be challenging, what, the top three this season. And that, you know, we've already probably overachieved. And there's a lot more, you know, work to be done to get there and to be there consistently. I'm sure that's what Andrew will be saying.
Yeah, I think to that point, Milo, I think other people have said that, I mean, if you look at that top three, I mean, Klopp and Pep took a while at both their clubs to get really pushing in the right direction. And as you said with Arteta, he had a season, 2 seasons where it wasn't going for him. And then he's had 2 more seasons where they've mentally collapsed to not get what they want. And the Emirates still love him. They're still right behind him, right behind the team. And
he spent £100 million on the player that he needed.
Yeah,
that's the
and
truth.
That's what I was about. That's what I was about to say. I mean, but those three clubs certainly have. Well, I don't know, really. I mean, I'll tell you, they certainly have the resources to do that. I mean, they have had the resources to do that, and we're. But I suppose you could argue Arsenal and Liverpool were nearing the same resources to do that as well. So, but we're. I mean, from our point of view, we're what 32 games in, I think, with Ange, aren't we? So, you know, you're not going to like. We're not going to go into a Chernobyl meltdown at this point, are we? I mean, what would be the point?
No. Well, you know what I mean? We shouldn't be. And again, you know, my weekly dialectic, I'll try hard not to do this every week. But I mean, you know, this was a shitty performance and we still are on the right path, right? I mean, I think that's sort of how I feel about yesterday's game and where we're at. I think it bears truth. I think we've sort of said what we thought of Fulham, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me. There are a couple of Fulham players I'd like to talk about, but you know, before we go there, what did you think of them?
They're very good. You know, I've kind of said why I thought they were very good. I think it was, you know, I think a lot went their way as well, but the way they approached the game was superb. It was different to what we've seen opponents do. If you told me beforehand how they were going to approach it, I would have thought that that would be playing right into our hands and we'd do really well against them, and we didn't. I was really impressed with them.
Silva's a funny one, really, because I'm never sure if I've kind of rated him, but and without going kind of Graham Souness, he does look a bit like, he always looks like that he's looking at you thinking, don't ask me the wrong question. You ask me a question I don't like, I'm going to like kick off. And whether that's, as I say, a bit soonest in the sense of that's his Latin temperament. I mean, De Zerbi's the same really, isn't he? He's got that kind of vibe where you just think you don't want to get on the wrong side of him. But obviously behind the scenes at Fulham, they must be keeping on the right side of Silva because he's hung around there and he seems to be, I mean, you know, from a distance, I don't know, he doesn't smile that often, but he seems to be enjoying it and getting on with the job and trying to build something. And it's not easy to do that at Fulham, especially when you're, you know, with Chelsea being the next door neighbours and only having a limited amount of money. But I think, they have got some good players. I mean, that chap up front, I don't know much about him, the bloke who scored. And I suppose the saving grace they've had this year is Paulinho didn't go at the end of that window because he's obviously a very good player for them. As I said before, I think they're a bit of a confidence team. But I've got a friend that supports Fulham as well, and he only lives sort of 100 yards over the road. So usually, I've been avoiding it because he can see me leave the house if he needs to, you see. So he might come out and give me a stick.
Building a higher fence this weekend.
Put some grow mower on your
privet hedge.
I've been getting WhatsApps from him though, so I can't block them out, unfortunately.
Don't look at them.
But fair play to him. I've always had a soft spot for Fulham because of the kind of traditional nature of their ground. I'm always wanting them to be in the Premier League because as an away day thing, it's probably up there with one of the best, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's fun ground, a fun place to go. I've never had a soft spot particularly for Fulham either way. I mean, I thought yesterday, for all the reasons we discussed, I thought they were bang, bang on it. Really, really good. I really liked Robinson. I really liked the look of him. Really good player. Yeah. But, you know, once again, Muniz, of course, got attention. The young Brazilian striker, I think they're saying he's going to be in the next Brazilian squad. Who knows? But the player, again, who just likes, he's leapt out at me for the last several years, 3 years or so. Pellini is just such a beast of a player. I to the point where I actually looked up his latest transfer value commensurate to his contract and was thinking, would we? I just, a player of that drive and mentality, I think would be such an addition, but he's probably a little too old and probably a little too late. You probably want a slightly longer one. Well, Milo's screwing his face up saying no, but of course.
How old is he?
That's why I think he's 28. So I think he's just a little outside the range. I mean, you can see where Bayern, he would have been great at Bayern this year, I'm sure. Yeah. I thought he was the heart of everything they did yesterday. He completely drove and, you know, kept their intensity going and really impressive. But yeah, you know, impressive performance. And I think it's really, I usually have a gripe about the physicality of teams and how they're too. I thought Fulham yesterday were perfect in that sense. I thought they were physical, but I thought that they were fair. Yeah. So, you know, all right. One positive and one negative in 30 seconds.
Negative, it was a really bad day at the office. Positive, I think these circumstances won't happen too many times. So, yeah, bad day, but probably not one that's going to be repeated too much, I don't think.
Positive, it's just tricky. I think it's just there's not many positives, but I think Dragusin just playing is a positive. You know, he's got to get, you know, those games somewhere. The negative was it was just annoying that after last week and Werner and Johnson kind of creating some good vibes, and you could probably say due to the nature of their kind of players, they sort of filled up their confidence bucket a bit last week against Villa. Werner, obviously in front of goal, wasn't great on Saturday. He missed an absolute kind of sitter. And even that chance in the first half with Johnson, it had that look where it went across to him and it's just no conviction whatsoever to hit it. And I've seen him do that before, and I kind of wanting him, as I say, to break out of that. And I thought it just maybe, you know, tip that bucket over a bit and emptied some of that confidence out. But because I think both those boys need it. I think we're probably more wanting Werner to be a provider than try and give him too many chances in front of goal. But, you know, you want a player to do both, really, let's be honest. But
I think the negative is actually maybe a little more existential. It's the fact that what was essentially a terrible day at the office for us in terms of, you know, mentality and application versus coming across a team that really did something to us seems to have set some of our fan base off into this tizzy where they're starting to connect 2 and 2 = 5 and it's the same old thing and we always do that, we're in this position. And so the biggest negative for me is that people can't differentiate between our history and who we are now and what we're trying to do. So the lack of context, I think. And I get it. We're all emotional during and after a game. I was so bummed out by the game yesterday, I actually stopped reading anything to do with it until probably about 2 hours before today. But, you know, nonetheless, I think a little bit more perspective would be great instead of this, you know, whirlwind of just like weird, like linking things from the past to the present. It's like, be aware of what we're doing. So my negative is what happens to our fan base at these moments. They don't recognize. And our positive actually is that we do have 2 weeks. And we have 2 weeks where we can completely forget about this in the worst ways. And we can, and the players will get a break from having to deal with it. They'll be with their international, you know, groups and so on and so forth. And by the time they come back, it's a new week. You know, it's a fresh start. So I actually think it's a positive that we've got that little, that we've got that break. That's my feeling. So there we go. And now I hand over to Milo for the week that was.
I was just going to say, I'd say after every bad result, I always just, I'd shut out social media, you know, message boards when I was on message boards or anything like that. I'd mute WhatsApp channels because people kind of latch on to easy solutions or repeat stuff. And there's very little kind of insight or, you know, I think anything interesting said immediately afterwards, people are lashing out. So I just kind of block all of that out. Mm-hmm. And then I go back to it once everything's settled down a bit and people are actually kind of, you know, either they've moved on and they're talking about something more interesting, or they're actually looking at kind of the reasons for it and the, you know, what's underpinning it, which is more interesting. I didn't have any, after the whistle, kind of just like, right, go and do something else.
I actually went to my Instagram account right afterwards and started watching more videos of Magnus the Destroyer, which is an English bull terrier that I follow on Instagram. And I would suggest that all of you do, if you like dogs and like English bull terriers, this bull terrier is the best I've ever seen. Magnus the Destroyer. That's my tip for you for Instagram. Anyway.
Like dogs, don't like Instagram. The week that was, Dickie's letter to fans. So in a shameless piece of...
Sorry, in a moment for that. That's just so you. That's just, I like, was there a more Milo statement than that? My word. Let's frame it. Brilliant. All right, carry on. Sorry, that was good.
In a shameless piece of Steph baiting, Dickie released a letter to fans through the Players Tribune. It was a bit of Steph baiting. He's tickled all your homogenous zones in one letter.
Dearie me. Well, Ricky was part of this as well. Don't leave Ricky out.
I think he's listened to this pod and he thought, I'm gonna get Steph talking about me constantly by doing a letter that just gets ticks all his boxes.
Until he realises I was one of the nutters chasing his car.
So, anyway, in the letter, he talks about his unhappiness at Juventus and how he needed to get away, his tough start at Spurs with the defeats to Southampton and Wolves, and his first start away at City where he scored one and set one up. His love of Spurs, the atmosphere in the team, what it's like playing for Ange. He finishes off talking about the Chelsea game earlier this season and how Ange always tells them to be themselves. And he also talks actually about his impending fatherhood. So how, despite losing that game, we never stopped being ourselves, and how at the end the team was applauded rather than booed and jeered. I take it you both either kind of read it or watched the video. What do you think? What stood out for you, Ricky?
Me? Oh, me. What stood out for me was, I think, I read it. I haven't watched the video. It's just, it was quite nice how candid and laid bare it was. I think that's what you get from the Players' Tribune. And I'm quite happy to read all that kind of stuff because of, as the aforementioned. Yes, that's the word. Aforementioned. Stuff that we just talked about, you know, the endless twaddle and crap that's been, you can read in other places. I like something like this. But I think something that stood out really was how kind of bulletproof his family is. And I think that's probably probably another thing a club would do when they're profiling a player to see what their kind of family life's like. And it was nice to see, you know, obviously, you know, your father's your hero, but it definitely sounded like that in Decky's case. Talks to his mum all the time. And Sandra's old sister just really gets into him every 5 minutes, which I thought was quite nice. I thought, you know, taking on the old Antonio Conte role, I think, for Decky. But yeah, I mean, she critiques him and's not scared of criticising him either. So it was a great insight, I thought.
What do you think, Steph?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you on the Tribune. I think the Tribune's great, a great forum in terms of professional athletes expressing themselves. It really is, seems to be the purest of all of them. I just thought, once again, it reminds us, number one, these players are human. Number two, they're young. And number three, you know, the mental pressure of playing at this level is something that everyone should consistently be aware of. And I think Decky himself has had some up and down form. And I think this piece really does sort of explain, you know, why that might, you know, why that might be. I mean, you know, it really does. And so I think it's always, and I'm always a great admirer of bravery in these situations. I thought it was a very brave thing to say and brave thing to write. And the more of that sort of stuff that can come through, that, you know, our quote unquote, you know, idols, if they are your idols or players that we follow, the better. It's going to be better for everyone when they see people expressing themselves as freely as Decky did here. So you're right. It was Steph Bate and I was all over it. I mean, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. It was a great piece. I was really happy that he did it.
In the embargoed section of Ange's press conference before the Fulham game, Ange was asked a question about how the club might prefer selling tickets to kind of occasional fans or occasional visitors to the ground, and how some sections of our fan base have been critical of tourists or plastic fans. I'm doing that twatty air quotes thing here. This is what Ange had to say.
See, that's really harsh, yeah? Because I'll tell you why, because I'm probably plastic and touristy because I was coming from the other side of the world, really passionate about football. And if I could get access to see a Premier League game, that was the world to me. So to label people plastic or tourists, I don't think that's fair just because people live on the other side of the world. This football club has supporters all over the world, have supporters all over the UK that don't always get access to the games of people who live here. And I think we should always have the ability to accommodate them and give them that feeling of, you know, it doesn't make them any less passionate. I think it's really disrespectful to call fans who are willing to go to the expense of coming halfway around the world. You don't know how passionate they are about their football club. Maybe they've only started supporting it in the last 2 years. Who knows? I don't know. But that doesn't diminish who they are, I don't think.
I think there's kind of two things with this. I think I've seen quite a lot of articles since this press conference where it's being linked with the discussion around the increase in season tickets and how the club might prefer to have, you know, someone who goes two or three times a season coming to the ground rather than season ticket holders because they'll spend more money because they might go to the club shop and what have you, which, you know, we've talked about on this pod. But I think for me, and so I'm talking personally here, I think when I see the term tourist used, it's predominantly used, I think, almost exclusively used or directed at Korean fans. And I don't think that maybe Andrew's talking about that explicitly. He might not be aware that that's how it's used. But I do think that as a fan base, I mean, I think that's racism, you know, labelling Korean fans in that way. And I think as a fan base, we've got to call it out. We're quite keen to point the fingers at other clubs when they have racist elements to their fan base. And I think we've got to call it out ourselves. What do you guys think? Were you pleased to hear Ange say this? I mean, and, you know, what do you think about these? So I suppose both elements, really, in terms of kind of, you know, what the club are looking for from their fan base. And then also, you know, maybe that racist element as well. Ricky?
Are you saying it's some kind of misguided reasoning from people? And I don't know whether this is social media people that's then kind of prompted the question regarding that their reasoning is that sometimes the price increase is attached to tourist fans, Korean fans, fans from abroad. Is that what's kind of prompted the question in the first place?
No, I don't think. I think the question has come about because of the discussion around the increase in prices and the reduction in concessions,
yeah,
and how that might price out some fans. I think that the term tourists is probably unrelated to that. And when I mainly see it, it's people talking about the atmosphere in the ground and blaming what appears to me Korean fans for the atmosphere. I mean, I would say that, you know, in my time going to Spurs, the atmosphere has always been a bit up and down. And the bits, the what I've always found what's always impacted most on my enjoyment of the game is some old bugger whinging all the way through the game. You know, kind of the whinging and the moaning, the people who get on the player's back, the people who moan at every sideways pass or, you know, want every ball hoofed forwards. Those are the people who've, you know, more frequently ruined my enjoyment. And, you know, I think the Korean fans are great. I think there are clearly different, elements to their fan culture than what is traditional within English football, but that's great. I think there's room for everyone. And it's not for me to tell someone else how to support their club or, you know, how to go about it. But I think some of our fan base, you know, do look at that. It's different and they're reacting against it, which I think is awful.
I mean, anyone that I would class as someone that's visiting our stadium, even as a tourist, is even out of just interest in football, I'd be a hypocrite to say that I wouldn't want someone like that there, because I've been, whenever I travel anywhere, I've been to the Nou Camp, I've been to a game at Bordeaux, I've been to a game at Saint-Étienne, and I hopefully might go to a game at Bilbao at the back end of this summer, because I'm a football fan. And that's almost like a kind of pass to be allowed to come anyway. You're interested in football. And the other thing is, what I don't understand is our stadium is probably 40,000 season ticket holders, 8,000 members, 3,000 away fans, and the rest are premier tickets and corporate probably. So if someone else is coming, then it's almost by proxy, they're coming from an invitation from a ticket that you don't want because you don't want to go. Because most of the tickets are all doing the finger thing again, as in the first place, aren't they? We're the main supporters of the club. So that person that comes on a ticket is generally buying a ticket from a fan that normally goes but doesn't want to go. So, why wouldn't they be welcome? I just don't understand the concept of that, or thinking that they have some kind of negative effect on the stadium and that. As I say, and a lot of them, I said this before the chat, sometimes they're first-time visitors and you don't always know the geography of the stadium or how you're meant to fit in or whatever and stuff like that. But the main reason you're there is hopefully for the love of football and just being massively interested. And the ones that come from Korea are obviously massively interested in certainly one person on that pitch. And the weird thing with that is if you've got some kind of disliking to those Korean fans, you love the Korean player that's on the pitch. You know what I mean? So what, they're all from the same country.
I agree with everything that both of you are saying. And as you've been talking about this, and I know we had a little chat about it prior as well, something has come into my mind, and it's a profile of the sort of person who makes these comments. And it's the same person who tells you that, you know, they were into this band before you were, and so they love that band more than you do. Right. It's the same thing. Same person who said, I was eating this meal, you know, before. I have greater appreciation of this cuisine. There are just people who are wired like that. And, you know, on a more existential scale, who fucking wants to hear from those people? I don't want to hear from them. If you're sitting next to some Korean supporters, instead of sitting there and moaning about how they support their club, why not engage in a chat with them? As you said, Ricky, that, you know, we all stand up and sing Sonny's name every 5 minutes. Well, hang on, have an experience, meet some new people, find out, bring people in. I want this club to be the biggest club it can be. I want people to enjoy being supporters of this football club, whether they've come from 10,000 miles or 1.2 miles. I don't care. Let's spread the word. And surely that is what we're looking for here. And I think Milo's about to make another point off the... Well, I'm assuming here. Why don't you make your point? And if you don't make it, I'll make it.
Well, I'm just going to make a couple of points. But I think, fan culture isn't static. Things move on. You know, clubs steal songs from, you know, where they go on their travels or things that happen in a game or, you know, because of a player comes there. You think about, you know, us as a club, how... You know, we've embraced, you know, you think about the kind of the Argentinian connection to our club, which is almost unique, you know, historically with us. And, you know, it goes back over 40 years now, 45 years. And that's great. That's added so much to us. And, you know, you were saying, Steph, you know, this Sonny isn't our first Korean player. There could be Korean players coming to the club who, you know, supported us since Lee Young-po was playing for us. And that's, you know, so that there'll be British fans, English fans in the ground who, you know, probably supported the club less time than those fans, but people will judge them because of the, you know, the color of their skin. And, you know, we don't see this kind of tourist tag pointed at, you know, Irish fans or, you know, Scandinavian fans who come to the ground. And, you know, that's my point about, you know, kind of it being exclusively directed at Koreans, almost exclusively directed at Koreans. And I think, sorry, one last point and then I'll shut up. I think also, you know, if we want our club to be successful, and Ange goes on to make this point, you know, what this is why we do the summer tours of, you know, the Far East or, you know, Australia that we're going to, you know, this summer. That's to build our fan base, and that's to build, you know, to pay for the, you know, the players that we want to move us to the next level. And unless we've got some kind of, you know, state fund backing us, you know, and that's what we're competing with, we're going to need to bring in that money. And that is, unfortunately, that's what modern football is now. Modern football is a global, you know, Premier League football is a global business with a global fan base. If you don't like that, go and watch your local non-league team. Yeah, they'll be grateful for your money. You'll get a traditional, you know, football experience. If that's what you miss, if that's what you like, if you like a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff where you get, you know, fill yourself up with lager, have a dodgy burger and scream abuse for 90 minutes and, you know, what have you. If that's your bag, there's, you know, actually don't scream abuse at non-league football either because it's great. I love it. But, you know, if you want the traditional thing, that's probably what it is. Premier League football isn't like that anymore. And it's not just us, it's all clubs.
Yeah. I mean, and on a wider scale, one of the great pleasures in life I find is when I do travel and I see someone who's wearing a Spurs shirt in, let's say, Seoul, or a Spurs shirt in Buenos Aires or wherever. I mean, I could rattle off cities forever. And I've had many experiences where that first communication has been pointing to, you know, to the Cockerel. They've got their shirt on. I've got one of the many items of merchandise I'm known for having purchased on this pod. I'm wearing mine and you just kind of have a smile and you find a conversation or you shake hands or whatever. It's positive. I want my club to be everywhere. I want people to love them. And look, the plastic element of this is very personal. I had a season ticket in the 80s. I went home and away. I went to, I mean, I spanned a lot of generations there, right? I moved to this country, United States, been here for a long time. I get back and forth for, you know, for minimum like 3-4 games. If I'm lucky, 8-9 games in a year. I'm fortunate for my work situation. The next time someone uses the word plastic, and hopefully none of our listeners do, they're referring to people like me. Yeah, I'm not plastic. And if you want to debate it, I'll stand all day long and I'll debate you. What I will do at games and the people I will call out are the people that Milo's been talking about. So if I'm ever next to someone at a game who complains about a Korean fan or complains about this or complains about that or bitches about a player, I will turn around and tell them that they're not the sort of supporter that I want to be around. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's, I think, where the line for me is drawn. We started a supporters club here in San Francisco. One final point. San Francisco Spurs, we started it in 2008. Myself and Stephen Pritchard drove this and I was right there with him. We have seen, I think, two revolutions of sort of age come through. You know, young kids who used to show up in 2008, 2009 with a Spurs shirt. They picked Spurs just because, you know, they remember when Ted Lasso was a character that was ascribed, you know, to I think it was Peacock or CBS, whoever it was, NBC, to bring football to America. You know, they saw Gareth Bale on a massive billboard in Times Square, albeit he didn't stick around. But you get the point. These kids have no emotional attachment. They just saw the badge. Maybe some of them told me, I saw the badge and I just thought it was cool. Others have said they weren't winning all the time, but they had history. I read up on it and I like that. Routinely, 30, 35, 40 people show up to watch games at Danny Coyle's. And I don't know most of them. Most of them are kids. I love it. It's fantastic. More of it and more of them, please.
Yeah, I mean, so just finally, so kind of with this pod, you know, we've got, with our host, we can see where everyone listens. You know, this autumn, we saw massive, massive growth in listeners from Australia, you know, presumably turned on because of Andrew and because of the success we were having. It's great. Yeah, I remember quite early on with this, I was kind of, I look at this religiously. I don't look at it quite so much now because, you know, the numbers are a lot better these days. So I don't have to fixate over it quite so much. But there was one point quite early on where, you know, three continents we're on. And I worked out that we could walk between all of our houses without leaving a country where someone was listening to the pod. And you're thinking, wow. This is kind of something we started during lockdown and, you know, and there's this Spurs community all over the world listening to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not alone. There's Australian, like dedicated Australian Spurs podcasts. You know, there's loads in the States, you know, there's all over the world, yeah. You know, there's this, and we should celebrate it. We should lean into it and and own it and absorb what's great about it and make it part of all of our supporting of the club.
I mean, I was just going to quickly conclude. I mean, I said earlier about the journos kind of things. I think they just, they don't really get to ask many questions. So, you know, I'd suggest them to not be guided by the, you know, the bowels of the Twitterati bloody think tank, really. You know what I mean? When compiling your to ask list, because I mean, if you're a journo, good luck if you're going to pander to that crowd, because it's a bottom feeding experience, really. Did this question sort of come out of probably some of that noise that's going on those kind of channels?
I mean, the only place I've seen kind of the tourist term used is on social media. I suppose it, you know, I don't spend much time on forums anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw it there. I mean, basically, they're the same thing, aren't they, really? It's just, you know, online channels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've predominantly seen it there. I think the question was more related to the conversation around the season ticket increases, and I'm sure that there have been elements of the fan base are saying, you know, they don't want us anymore. They want to get rid of us and sell our seats to tourists will be what they're saying. But
yeah.
As you pointed out, and I think Ricky did too, maybe some of the people who are criticising are the same people who then try and get as much money as they can for their ticket on the other.
It's almost like the 80s where you'd put like you could sell your seat but gave conditions that none of these nationalities can buy my seat. It's almost like, is that what they're trying to say? Like they're trying to sell it on as a season ticket, because you know it's fair enough. You put your season ticket up, anyone can buy that ticket on the exchange if you're a member or whoever. Yep. And I presume a lot of foreign fans are members because that's one way to connect themselves to the club as well. And it gives them a chance to get a ticket. And, you know, if someone's offering it, then it's fair enough. Whoever buys it can just trundle in from any corner of the world. That, you know, they're welcome to come.
And their money is as good as yours or mine.
Yeah,
that's the perfect play. Yeah, their money is as good as yours or mine, and their level of enthusiasm and support for Tottenham Hotspur is as good as yours or mine as well. Whether it's their first game or their 300th or their 600th, if they're there supporting the team, and if they're not there supporting the team, they're there to experience what Tottenham Hotspur is all about. Come on in. Yeah. Welcome, and please stick around if you don't know us, and if you do know us, it's great that you finally made it, you know. So anyway, I say this bit, don't I say thanks, Thales, that was fun. But it was no, it was fun, even though it wasn't a fun game to talk about. We always find a way through. There's no Spurs next week. Boo. Did I read every O?
I think so. Yeah. Boo, boo, international football.
Boo, international football. But we'll still be here, won't we?
Yep.
We'll be around, come rain or shine. We'll give you an hour and a bit of top Tottenham content. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you then.